She said you have to give voice to the thing that you're ashamed of, or shame will take over. Shame thrives in silence. Shame thrives in fear. Shame thrives in when you decide that you're going to be alone and you push everyone away because you don't want them to know. Shame thrives in those environments. And so the reason why I was able to get past my financial shame when I lost everything during the last 2008-2009 recession is because I told Linda, I didn't know that's what I was doing, but I was giving voice to my shame.
That was Tiffany Alice, the Budgetnista, former teacher turned personal finance educator and best-selling author. In fact, her latest book, which is a must-read, by the way, Get Good With Money, was just released on March 30th. Hi, I'm Celeste Headlee. Welcome to Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. This podcast brings you conversations with some of the most brilliant and inspiring minds around. They have invaluable advice for you and inspiration that can help you navigate both your career and your life at home. This episode is perfectly timed for Financial Literacy Month. We'll explore how you can find peace, safety, and harmony with your money, no matter how big or small your goals, and no matter how rocky the market might be. Tiffany breaks it down for us, making the complex world of finance more relatable so you're empowered and motivated to take control and make your money work for you right now. We have a lot of ground to cover, so let's get started. I think one of the things that's so compelling about your story is not just the advice, but the fact that your advice is coming from this place of deep knowledge. And by that, I mean, it hasn't been a really long period of time since you were in financial trouble.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of your story. You got laid off in 2008. You had to move back in with your parents. Can you tell me, how did that thought process go for you? I mean, was there ever a moment when you sat down, you're living with your parents again, and you had to say to yourself, how am I going to get out of this?
No, absolutely. I remember feeling, honestly, a state of despair. I was sad. I was ashamed. I was embarrassed. And I think if you mix all of those up in a pot, it was despair because I didn't think I could get out of it. I thought that I'd messed up, that my mistakes were too big to climb out of. And so for a minute there, I stewed in those mistakes. I was like, you know, you've lost your job. It's a recession. You've lost your home because you couldn't afford the mortgage anymore. You're literally back home with your parents. You're 30 now. I don't know how to do anything else but teach. That's what I felt. And they weren't hiring teachers because with teachers, if you lose your job in the beginning of the school year, it's not like a classroom can be open without a teacher. So they had already done their hiring. And I just remember thinking, like, it's just, this hole is too deep. And so should I just give up? I remember feeling especially bad because I thought to myself, you had more money the last time you were in this room as like a teenager than you do now at 30.
Oh my God.
I know. I was just like, I mean, when you're feeling really sad for yourself, you're just like, I was just going in. Like, and then, oh, and yeah, another thing, you know, it was really unhealthy. But I think it's important to share that because there are people who are listening who are actively doing that now, who there's been some financial misstep, or there has been maybe quarantine took your job, or your industry is no longer profitable, whatever that is. And you are in the despair part of your journey where you're using all of these things as a weapon against yourself. And you're telling yourself how bad you are. How could I have made this mistake? Like all of these terrible things that are just not helpful. And the truth is, yes, is there some responsibility? Like, well, you know, Tiffany, you could have done this. But like, I mean, I could not have anticipated a housing bubble. I could not have anticipated, who could anticipate quarantine? The first time I ever heard of a pandemic, or the last time was like a movie. Who can anticipate a worldwide pandemic? You just can't. And sure, could you have a little bit more savings? But even that, let's just say you were super responsible and you had a year's worth of savings. It's been a year. It's been a year. And if you were still out of work, then what? So I'm here to do to you what my best friend Linda did for me. She'd been calling me for some months and I'd been avoiding her because of the shame. And I finally picked up and I was going to pretend like everything is okay, like I always did. And she just asked me, how are you doing? You know, you haven't picked up the phone in a while. And I was like, I'm fine. But she knows, just like most best friends know. And she's like, yeah, you don't sound fine. And I just started crying and just unloading all of my financial fears and shame. And Linda was like, that's it. I just didn't understand. I'm like, what do you mean? She said, well, Tiffany, so many of us have been struggling. Do you watch the news? Or like, honestly, we just turned 30. I mean, I don't know about you, but everybody else in their 20s was a hot financial mess. You were the only one that was like navigating from a place of financial responsibility in our 20s. So she was basically was like, welcome to the club. There's a lot of room in here. And she started laughing. And it gave me the permission that I needed to forgive myself. And so I'm going to Linda you. That's it. Oh, you have foreclosure? Okay, yeah, me too. Oh, credit card debt? Yep, did that too. You're thinking about bankruptcy or you've already been through it? I didn't go through bankruptcy, but I was just on the cusp. Okay, and? Okay, and? Okay, and? Okay, and? Whatever it is that you're navigating through, there is a way out. You're not the only one. You're just not. There's so many people. I promise you, your neighbors are struggling. There are friends who are not admitting it, but they're having a hard time as well. Family members who are pretending everything is fine, but it's not fine. You are not the only one. In fact, you're part of the majority. Most people are having a hard time, but now it's time to ask yourself, and what will I do about it? And so that's how I built the Budgetnista, because it was, what will I do about it? And I started to dig my way out and build myself back up. And in doing so, I started to help other people. And I started the Budgetnista over 10 years ago. And since then, over 1 million women have been helped because someone gave me the tools I needed to say, okay, and forgive yourself, Tiffany. It's okay.
I mean, not only have you helped a lot of women, Tiffany, but you have a book that just came out. The book has done incredibly well. You are the January cover of Money Magazine, something I assume you couldn't have imagined.
No, I could never.
Having looked at the book, it seems like one of the things that you learned was to stop saying, I'm in debt.
Mm-hmm.
What's the problem with saying, I'm in debt?
Because it makes it seem like debt is a place. It gives debt too much power, right? Because it makes it seem like debt is a place that you're almost locked into, and you're not. You have debt. Having debt is lighter. At any moment in time, you could not have debt. But being in debt, it just, words mean things and they're very powerful and it helps you to stay in bondage to that debt. And so I tell people, don't say that you're in debt. Yes, you have debt, but honestly, you have other things as well. Because no one ever says, right, I'm in wealth, right?
Yeah.
Or I'm in savings, right? Because we give debt so much power. And so instead, I reject that. I tell people, it's okay to acknowledge that you have debt, but you're not in debt. You are bigger than your debt. You're not in it. And so that's honestly the reason why I wrote Get Good With Money, my new book, is because I thought to myself, because I was a school teacher for over 10 years before I started the Budgetnista. And the teacher in me was noticing that the people that I was teaching, largely women, that they were succeeding in silos. So I used to teach preschool. So it's like I'm teaching and they're only learning letters or only learning numbers or only learning shapes. So I found that the women that I was serving, this woman would have excellent credit, but no savings. Another woman would have all the savings, but was not investing. Someone else was getting out of debt, but didn't have a good budget. And the teacher in me, I got teacher anxiety because I thought they're not holistically learning. That's not enough. You have to know your letters, shapes, numbers, and colors before you leave if you're going to be a strong student. And so there are 10 components that I felt that in order to be a strong financial student, that there are these 10 components. And I wanted to write like a manual to help you work through them, no matter how much you made, no matter what you did for a living, no matter where you were currently. And so that's why I wrote Get Good With Money, to be that manual.
So I am going to use my own story because I think it's probably similar to some other people's, especially women, which is that I lost over half my income because of the pandemic. I've had to, in order to make up that other half that I've brought in, I've had to hustle, right? I had to pick up some freelance and I had to pick up other work. And I'm now at a place where I had built that cushion and it's gone. So what do I do? What do women like me? Because you and I both know that the pandemic, women have really suffered financially and in terms of employment during the pandemic.
Yeah.
What do we do as we move forward?
So there are two things that I've been sharing that women should do, including you, Celeste. It's one, asking for help. And the second is to get creative. So asking for help. Sometimes your municipality is going to have some sort of help. Is it that you ask your landlord if there's some sort of forgiveness? Is it reaching out to the people that you owe your bills to see if they have a hardship program? You should leave no stone unturned when it comes to asking for help. Is it leaning into family and friends? Like, I would make a list of everything I spend money on and ask myself, okay, is there aid here? Your credit card company might say, okay, we're going to freeze your interest rate. Your mortgage, we already know that the American Rescue Plan recently passed. So there's a moratorium where you don't have to pay your mortgage, I believe, until September 21st or 29th. And so that's help. So you want to lean into those resources that are around you. They're there to help and set aside ego, set aside shame, because at this point in time, we are in an emergency state. And then two, getting creative. So to your point, you had to hustle on the side. And that's what it's going to look like. That it's going to look like there are some people, if you currently have a job, there are people who are hiring. Like if you are in certain positions, like a friend of mine just switched over to a new HR position. I know folks who are in finance field right now. Things in personal finance are actually picking up because when the economy starts to do poorly, that's when that business picks up. There are way more entrepreneurs now because people have started their own businesses. So if you're interested in helping people get organized, I was just looking for an admin. And so many of my friends are looking for admins as well. So getting creative of how you can show up. I know a young mother, she's got two little ones. She started to learn how to get procurement. She's an engineer. And she used to work for these retail stores and get all of the resources needed in order to build in-store displays. So she's like, oh, I know how to secure and procure like materials. And so she took all these procurement classes. And now she reaches out to different municipalities, who needs pencils, who needs balls, who needs this. And then she finds them and sells them for more than what she secured them for. She's also now helped other people write their own proposals. So that's how she's making money on the side while she's homeschooling the kids alongside them taking classes online. So people are getting really creative now, and that's what it's going to look like. There is no one size fits all. It's going to be about leaning into your skill set. And sometimes it's the skill before the skill. I know another young woman who was actually an analyst and super, her name's Tracy. She's very detail oriented. I was looking for a publicist and I knew how detail oriented she was. And she was like, but I don't know how to do this. I'm like, no. It's mostly about just keeping up with who did you reach out to? Are you a decent writer? And she was pitching in a specific way and keeping detailed notes about who said what and when. And she's since been my publicist for about a year and she's knocking it out of the park because she leaned into her skill before the skill. She had a skill as an analyst, but the skill before that was really that her attention to detail. And so asking for help and getting creative are the two things that I say to lean into, Celeste.
I want to dig a little bit deeper into this because one of the reasons people don't ask for help is because of the shame that you mentioned earlier. They feel bad about asking for help. Sometimes one of the last things they will do is talk to family members and ask for money. How do you get past that? This hesitancy to say, can I have a loan? Can I get some help?
So I struggle with this as well. So I have a therapist. Well, Dr. Green is really my coach, but she's a therapist as well. So I asked her that question, how do I get past shame? And she shared with me something so profound, and I'm going to share it with you, Celeste, and everyone listening, that the antidote for shame is voice. And she said, you have to give voice to the thing that you're ashamed of, or shame will take over. Shame thrives in silence. Shame thrives in fear. Shame thrives. And when you decide that you're going to be alone and you push everyone away because you don't want them to know, shame thrives in those environments. And so
The reason why I was able to get past my financial shame when I lost everything during the last 2008-2009 recession is because I told Linda, I didn't know that's what I was doing, but I was giving voice to my shame. And in doing so, it allowed me to free myself from shame. Shame was like, uh-oh, she's talking about it. Uh-oh, this is not good. Like, Tiffany is sharing. And the more I shared some more and some more and some more. And so you have to find your Linda, a safe space and place that you can share your shame, give voice to your shame. It's the reason why I started Dreamcatcher. So Dreamcatchers is my community of women that we lean on each other, we help each other. There's a million Dreamcatchers worldwide. Half of us hang out on Facebook. We've got this Facebook page called Dreamcatchers Live Richer with the Budgetnista.
Which, as I should mention, is free. You can find it.
Free. Yep. Absolutely free.
But it is private unless you've joined the group. Yeah.
Yes. Unless you join the group. It's totally free. And it's been so for the last 10 years and will continue to be so. It's private though, to your point, Celeste. But you still have to be mindful. There's a 500,000 people in there. So it's private to the outside, but anyone inside can certainly see your posts. But I will say this, that I've got amazing admins and we do not allow any negativity. But what I have found is that everyone doesn't have a Linda in their life, but there are 500,000 Lindas in that group. You can post anything, anything. Like, I don't know how my children are going to eat. Someone who was just in that position is going to share with you how she went, got through it. You might post, my husband lost his job. I'm not sure how to navigate with my teenager financially. Anything you post, there's someone who is either experiencing the same thing and is giving you encouragement, or someone who has experienced it and worked their way through it and is walking you through it as well. It's an amazing, amazing place. And so you have to give voice to your shame. And if you don't have a special person or place in your own life, you're welcome to join us at Dreamcatchers.
One of the first things you talk about in your book is how to figure out the source of your financial troubles. In other words, is it that I don't make enough, or is it that I'm spending too much?
Yes.
How do you do that?
So one, you have to start with a budget. I know it's not everyone's favorite, but it's my fave. A basic budget is just this. It's a list of everything you spend money on, right? So you can pull out your debit card or credit card. What do you spend money on? How much does it cost you monthly? And then I want you to code that list. Start with the B's. Put a B next to any bill. So a bill is anybody you have a financial obligation to, right? Any organization. And then you're going to put a U in front of the B's that are like utility bills. So those are bills that fluctuate based upon your usage. And then everything else after that is a C. Those are what I call your cash / choice bills. So these are bills that you really have a choice over how you spend your money here. And these are your cash expenses.
Sorry, I want to interrupt you just for a second, because you have to be careful here, because a bill that's like, let's say you pay a service to pick up dog waste from your yard, right? Or mow your lawn. That's a bill, but it's also a choice, right?
Yes, it is a bill, but it's also a choice. I mean, it doesn't have to be an exact science, but I would say for your bills, you can still count that as a B. I always say it's something that you've made an obligation to, and that if you didn't pay it, then it would be an issue. That's how you know. If someone walks your dog and you don't pay them, there would be an issue there. Because what you're really trying to see is where you have the most control. Although, you know, like the dog walking, you might say, you know, that's an easy bill that I can, because there are some bills that are fairly easy for you to get rid of. But typically, most of your bills are not as easy to reduce or minimize as your cash expenses. So like groceries, grooming, entertainment. This is where you really can do whatever it is that you want. Like, there's not a set amount that's kind of been allocated to these things. So once you figure out your B's, your UB's, and your C's, then I want you to start doing the math. I want you to add up all your C's and compare it to how much all your B's and UB's cost. If most of your money is going towards C's, then you have a spend too much issue, because most of your money are really going toward things that are not financial obligations, but really where you have the most choice. If most of your money are B's and UB's, that's where most of your money is going toward, then you might have a don't make enough issue, because most of your money is going toward financial obligations. And so that is just a, like almost like a preliminary test to see, do I have a don't make enough issue or spend too much issue? And so feel free, then you can move some things around to your point. You could say, you know what, I'm actually going to move my dog walking over to the seas. Does that make a difference? And you're free to do so. But we're just trying to get a high level view of, is most of my money spent on obligations or just the things that, you know, I have really the biggest choice over? Because here's why we do that, Celeste. When I was a preschool teacher, I did not understand that I had a don't make enough issue. So when you're frugal and you say that you don't have enough money at the end of the month, your normal knee-jerk reaction is to save more. I was like, oof, you know what? I don't have enough to do the things I want to do. I just need to cut back more. But I didn't have a don't make enough issue. I mean, I didn't have a spend too much issue. I didn't. I was already cut back as I could be. I had a don't make enough issue. And had I known that, I wouldn't have reduced my life even more. So it took me about a year to get and understand, Tiffany, you have a don't make enough issue. So then I was able to look at solutions differently. Instead of saying, let me trim back even more, I started to babysit and tutor, and I made an extra $6,000 a year doing so. So that's why it's important to understand, what is my true issue? Do I not make enough because most of my money is going to bills? Or am I spending too much because most of my money is going to my cash expenses? And then only focusing on those solutions. Frugal people don't need to cut back more. And people who are making plenty don't necessarily need to make more. They need to cut back.
How do you then decide what your fixed priorities are? So let's say that I have a number of commitments and I want to bring down the amount of debt that I have. How do I know which one to work on?
So if I'm looking at my budget, this is why I love the coding of the budget, right? Mm-hmm. The C, the B, the UB. Because if I'm like, okay, I want to trim down my debt and I know I have to find some money for my budget, I don't go to my fixed expenses first. I don't go to my bills first. That's where I have the least amount of control. I'm going to go to my C's first. I'm going to say, all right, C's, get in line. You know what, Tiffany? You know how to redo your own hair. You know what, Tiffany? You don't have to get a manicure every week. You know what, Tiffany? You don't have to get Uber Eats every other day. Let's work on our C's. And once I reduce my C's on paper, how much money do I see left over in my budget? Is that enough? If not, let's bump up to UBs. That's where we have moderate level of control. Okay, UBs, these are utilities, right? Okay, water, okay, electricity. What can I do to kind of bring some of these things down, my usage down? And once I make the changes on paper, is that enough money in excess for me to put toward savings or debt? No. Now we can look at the Bs. Okay, these are bigger changes to be made. Okay, my rent. You might say something like, I'm in a one bedroom now, but when my lease is up, I can move to a studio and save $200 a month. I can refinance my home. I can have a higher deductible on my car insurance. I don't want people to start on this end because these are bigger, heavier choices. You always want to start making choices with your C's, then your UBs, then your Bs. And that's how you prioritize where you're going to find that excess money from. If you have a spend too much issue, you really need to cut back on your spending.
You're listening to a conversation with Tiffany, the Budgetnista Aliche, finance educator and the author of Get Good with Money, which was just released on March 30th. If you are loving this conversation and you want more inspiration, mark your calendar and then join us on May 6th for the Virtual Workplace Summit. It is presented by the Conferences for Women, designed for everyone who's leading teams. It's a national event that offers you the tools and the skills necessary to shape and thrive in the new world of work. This year's lineup features the nation's leading workplace strategists, including Malcolm Gladwell, Ijoma Oluo, and Thomas Friedman. To see the agenda, the full speaker lineup, and register, visit conferenceforwomen.org. Now, let's get back to our conversation. So, if you are looking for new work, as so many people might be now, either because they lost their job or were laid off, or for whatever may be the reason, how much should the salary enter into it?
So you're saying if you're looking for new work?
Yeah, if you're having to look for a new job, how important as a priority is the amount of that salary?
So it's extremely important, but not just the salary, right? So before, this is what I did. I remember I did this years ago when I was first starting as a preschool teacher. I kind of added up my bills and saw what my take-home pay needed to be just to cover my bills. And so let's just say my bills at the time were $2,000. And I said, okay, I want to save though $500 a month. So I need a take-home pay of $2,500 a month. This was 21-year-old Tiffany.
Mm-hmm.
I went to this site called Paycheck City. It's still up. It's free. And you can work your way backwards based upon your state. You can put in take-home pay and it will tell you how much money that you need to make annually. What's so great about that is that it's not like I can just say, well, what's $2,500 a month times 12 months? That's not your actual take-home pay. There's so many things that come out of your pay. And Paycheck City does those calculations for you, even based upon like how much your state taxes are going to be. And so I was armed with that number. Like, let's just say it was $40,000 a year. That's what I needed in order to really get the take-home pay that I wanted. Now I know, okay, I cannot take less than $40,000 a year in order to maintain the current lifestyle that I have. But also keep in mind, you want to think about things like insurance, benefits. Do they have a profit share program? Do they match your retirement account? Like 6%, if you put in 6%, they put in 6%. So consider other things like insurance, like I said in particular. So my husband and I have been trying to have a baby the last 2 years, and I've been doing IVF, in vitro
fertilization. Yeah.
Yes. You think I would know after 2 years? Honestly, we probably spent close to $200,000 in insurance money.
Oh my goodness.
But thankfully not out of pocket, because my husband works for the city and he has state benefits. So when I say I probably spent less than $500 out of pocket just in co-pays, because I pay $10 every time I see the doctor. So imagine that. I mean, I saw one time that all the medicine, all the shots that I had to take just for one cycle was $80,000. And I paid nothing for the medicine. So insurance plays an incredibly important role in when you're looking for a job as well. So do work backwards for what you must make in order to make your life work, but also consider other things like insurance and benefits. That's equally as important.
So in reading your work, it's so clear that you're a teacher, because you make things that for many of us are so scary and complicated seem quite easy to understand. We wanted to do a lightning round with you if you're up for it.
I am. And thank you so much. It warms my teacher heart. I sent out a book to a fellow educator and they were like, Tiffany, this is so good. Like, I laid it out intentionally, so it was very easy to anticipate what the next step was going to be. I give you homework assignments along the way that are easy to implement. I give you all the tools and resources. I kept the student, the reader in mind, and how are you going to navigate this book without feeling intimidated? So yeah, that just warms my heart.
So it's totally true. And I think for many people like myself, financials are things we don't really want to think about or talk about. So you definitely take some of the fear out of it. But we have these five phrases or words, and I want to see what's the first sort of tactic that comes to mind when I say these things. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the first one is debt management.
Debt management. Phone calls?
What do you mean?
Well, because you're going to have to brave it and speak to your debt collectors. That's what I always think of, like, right? Because I had debt collectors call at some point. And so like, if sometimes that's part of debt management, that you're going to have to put on your big girl pants and talk to the debt collector and work something out.
Okay. Yeah. Well, nobody really likes to do that. The next one is budgeting.
Fun. And say yes plan. I really like budgeting, because your budget to me is your say yes plan. I know people think of budgets as deprivation. It's not. Think about your budget like your mom. You say, Mom, can I have a dessert? And she says, yes, when you finish your dinner. Mom, can I go outside to play? Yes, if you did your homework. So your budget is there to say yes, when, if, or. And so people get mad at the when, if, or. But at the end of the day, your budget is working in your best interest, just like your mom.
Okay, the next one is saving.
Foundation. And so savings is the foundation for you to be able to invest later on down the line.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense, because that actually gives you even more freedom, right? The more that you have in saving, the more freedom you have. Okay, that makes sense. And how about this? And I know this one is coming up for a lot of people and they are discounting it because they feel it's not possible to do this during a pandemic. And it is this: negotiate a raise.
Go for it. That's the first thing that comes to mind. And you absolutely can. If you're not keeping a Go Me file, so That's the name that my sister used to call, like, her, she had like a notebook that whenever she added value at her job, financially or otherwise, she would write down in her notebook the day how she added value, and she would call it Go Me. And so you should have your Go Me file. It might be a file on your computer. It might be a notebook, but someplace where you are keeping track of how you're adding value, especially if you can quantify that value. Like, I did this thing and it saved the company $100,000. I did this thing and it made the company $20,000. So when you go in to ask for your raise and to get your reviews, you're not really asking for a raise. You're merely saying, hey, I have done this, is what I've brought to the table. This is the value that I brought. I'm merely saying I want to be compensated for the value that I brought. So yes, I think it's possible. Go for it and make your Go Me folder.
Okay, and here's the last one. And I also feel like people may be not thinking about this during the time of struggle or during a time of pandemic, frankly, and that is investing.
Don't wait. The thing about investing is that the beauty of investing is compounding interest. And that's when your money makes money on your money. So let's just say you invest a dollar today, and it, by next year, it grows to $1.10. And then you'll earn interest on the dollar and the 10 cents the year after that. So now it's $1.30. Year after that, you earn interest on the dollar, the 10 cents, and that extra 20 cents. So now you're $1.50. Compounding interest is when you earn money on your money. But if you never invest that dollar just sits there. It literally loses its value due to inflation, which is the devaluing of money over time. That same dollar can't buy the same thing year after year. It's worth less and less. And so you must invest, not even to grow wealth, just to maintain your current life. You must invest. They say so few women invest, and it's really a shame because women think that they're not able, but I'm here to tell you as a teacher, it's not a capability issue. It's a confidence issue. Somewhere along the way, including myself, you've received messages to say that investing is hard. And I say this, do you have children? Do you have a partner? Do you pay your bills? Do you manage at a workplace? Those things are hard. Investing is nothing in comparison to living your life as a woman. I promise you, you're already killing it. And so you can invest. It is a confidence issue, but not a capability issue.
However, I mean, I do want to touch on quickly before we end our conversation. I could probably keep talking to you for a very long time, but it's especially difficult for women, and it's especially difficult for women of color.
Yes.
And so much of that is out of our control, that the system has been set up in a way to stack the odds against us. And we can absorb messages. We can absorb the messages that we're being sent, that we are worth less money, for example, that yes. We are not capable of doing things, that if we end up with a lot of debt, if we have a catastrophe, a financial catastrophe, that's because we deserve it, that we should be ashamed of it. How do we combat? These are not just the voices that are in our head. These are the voices that are all around us.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we silence that?
So, well, one of the ways to do so is to seek out other financial voices. I mean, I didn't necessarily want to step into doing the Budgetista at first. I was helping family and friends, but I realized that as a Black woman, people needed to see me. And I couldn't believe the reception from other women, especially Black women. So many of them were like, oh my gosh, Tiffany, you're like my friend, my sister, my cousin, my now auntie, now that I'm 40. I'm like, I'm not an auntie yet. I mean, mm-hmm. I am an aunt to my niece and my nephew, but like not to a 30-year-old. So it's important that other faces are shown. So let's, for example, my picture is on the cover of my book. And I'm not going to lie, I fought against it at first because I was afraid that folks wouldn't buy a book with a Black woman on the cover, a finance book.
Oh, man.
Yes. I really was like, no, I don't think it's a good idea. And Penguin Random House, who was my publisher, said, no, especially because you're a Black woman, you need to be on the book cover. That women who are walking through those aisles need to see other women.
Good for them.
And I'm so glad that they did.
Yeah.
So that's one, is like seeking out. There are way more voices that are out there right now. Thank goodness. You know, that's one. And two, education cures so many things. If for whatever reason you're feeling like you are not capable of investing, there are so many courses. Like I have an online school called the Literature Academy. There's so many courses that you can take. there are podcasts that you can listen to. I have a podcast called Brown Ambition, but there's amazing ones that talk about money, like Earn Your Leisure, In the Vault. These are podcasts that talk about money. And so there are YouTube channels, like one of my favorites is called Minority Mindset. So it's super important to educate yourself, starting with the basics and taking that baby toe. And something else that would really help women as well is that I believe that women work best in community. Don't go it alone. I have a WhatsApp channel called The Wealth Channel with a couple of my girlfriends, and we share financial news with each other and what we think it means and dive a little deeper. There's one person in particular, Carol. She's really good at investing in stocks. So when she finds one, she shares it with us and she explains why it's so good. And so find your safe place to lean into other women to work with you on investing. There are opportunities also for you to invest in kind of like a set it and forget it kind of way. If you're investing for retirement, think of a target date fund. These are mutual funds, which is a basket of stocks, bonds, and other investments that are invested on your behalf. And the closer you get to retirement, your target date, the more conservative your investments become because they know you're going to need your money soon. So that's on the retirement side, target date fund. And on the just investing for wealth side, consider mutual funds or an ETF. An ETF is called an exchange traded fund. And so what these are is a basket, again, of stocks that you can put your money into. You might just say, hey, I'm going to choose a mutual fund that focuses on technology. Or even better, I'm going to pick an ETF, an exchange traded fund that focuses on a particular market, an index fund. So a market is like the S&P 500. That's 500 large companies in the United States that are traded on the market. And you can say, I'm going to Google ETF for S&P 500. That's the market. And just put your money into that every single month. And it's going to do what the market does. Over time, the market has always won. So if you just did that, $50 a month into a mutual fund or $50 a month, you purchase in that S&P 500 ETF. That's it. You don't have to pick individual stocks. $50 a month, $100 a month into your target date fund. It's literally just that. Starting with just that, you're going to be much better off than most people.
So last question for you, since you said that education solves so many things, you had a big win in this area a couple years ago in New Jersey, at least. They passed the Budgetnista law with the help of Assemblywoman Angela McKnight. And this makes it mandatory in the state of New Jersey for middle schools to teach financial education.
Yes.
What's so great about this law?
Because when I was teaching preschool, I used to teach age-appropriate financial education in the classroom. And Angela was a friend of mine before she became an Assemblywoman. And when she won her seat, she said, I want to focus on education. And I told her, you know, there's a law in place for New Jersey for high school students and financial education, but no law for elementary and middle school. So she said, let's change that. And I didn't even know that as a citizen, I could play a role. It was like a civics lesson, like Schoolhouse Rock. I'm just a bill sitting on Capitol Hill, right? Remember that? And so we worked together on crafting the language for a bill. We met with constituents and the committees. And she presented it and it passed in 2019. And I understood that it passed, but I didn't really understand just what a big deal it was until my neighbor who lives around the corner, Brianna, she has a daughter in middle school and we're really close to her daughter, calls me Aunt Tiffany. And she was doing her homework and she knows I used to be a teacher and Olivia, her name is. She said, Aunt Tiffany, can you help me with my homework? And I said, sure. And I was looking at her homework. I was like, you guys get money homework in school? You guys get money homework in school? It was my law in action that here Olivia, this beautiful little girl, is learning about money in middle school because of that bill. And so it's things like that. Like that's the legacy I want to leave. I want to leave a legacy of a three-prong approach that I helped to bring forth knowledge because if you don't know better, you can't do better. I help to bring forth access to financial education because I believe in partnering with other people that can help open those doors. And I help to bring forth a community, my dream catchers that I welcome all women into and some men. But I always remind men that you're a guest of a guest. But knowledge, access, and community as it relates to financial education, that's the legacy I want to leave. And I'm hoping with my new book, Get Good With Money, that it really solidifies that legacy.
Tiffany, thank you so much. We hope you enjoyed this episode featuring Tiffany the Budgetnista Aliche, former teacher turned personal finance educator and best-selling author. You can check out her incredible programs at thebudgetnista.com and then learn more about her book at getgoodwithmoney.com. You'll also find a transcript of today's conversation and some more resources we've compiled for you in the show notes at conferencesforwomen.org/podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, share it with others. We could all benefit from a little bit of inspiration and motivation and advice right now. The Conferences for Women is the largest network of women's conferences in the nation. They draw more than 50,000 women and men to annual events in Boston, Philadelphia, Austin, and California. Learn more at conferencesforwomen.org. I'm Celeste Headley, and this is Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. Thank you so much for listening. Be kind and be well.